the content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, I'm Doris Hyde for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Vision News. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from the Blind Post for August. Out of Sight's website has moved. Game night on first and third Tuesdays on Out of Sight, an ad for the Burkeville Lodge in Virginia, and the Eyes on Success recent podcasts. From Maryland School for the Blind, there is a parent-student webinar workshop coming up September 18th. From the Independent UK, their take on Paralympian David Brown, the sprinter. From CNN, Becca Myers, deaf-blind para-athlete, has withdrawn from the Games. The Social Security Administration has bumped the COLA for next year, according to CNBC.com. And from ScienceDirect.com, a little blurb on the Argus II retinal implant. Let's get started. Announcements from the August Blind Post. OutofSight.net has moved. Visit our new home. If you would like to join blind and visually impaired members from all around the world, learn about your iPhone, receive technical assistance, play interactive games, discuss great authors in our monthly book club, spin tunes on our internet radio station, challenge friends to a game of chess, wow the audience with your talents at our on-stage event, take chances in our numerous dice games, go shopping with us in our virtual market, and so much more. Stop on by on our new dedicated server. Become a member for free and join us at www.out-of-sight.net. Come play Zilch or go fish on Out of Sight. Robin and Melinda host a teaching event on Out of Sight for Zilch on the first and third Wednesday evenings of each month at 7 p.m. Eastern. For those who want to play Go Fish, join Melinda in the Game Connection Room on the second and fourth Wednesday evenings of each month at 7 o'clock Eastern. The Burkeville Lodge for the Blind is a low-cost resort in a country setting. We have an in-ground swimming pool, fishing boating pond with walking trail. We have a gazebo with steps and ramp for access. We have good food and piano and organ in the dining room. We invite all blind, visually impaired people and friends and families. We are located in Burkeville, Virginia, 23922. For reservations and rates, leave a message at 434-767-4000. Or for more info, call Richard at 757-468-0277. Go to our website, www.vawb.org. Eyes on Success, shows and podcasts, episode 2129, On the Road Again After COVID, aired July 14th, 2021. Video calls with a 3 and 5-year-old just don't cut it. So hosts Nancy and Peter Torby decided to take their first big road trip after COVID to see the grandkids in person, hear about their journey from Colorado to Michigan through the cornfields of Nebraska and Iowa, some of the unusual sights they saw along the way, and more. Episode 2128, Tools for Blind Scientists, aired July 7th. The more tools one has in one's toolbox, the better one will be prepared to take on new tasks and address new problems. Hosts Nancy and Peter Torpy talk with Mona Minkara, M-I-N-K-A-R-A, Assistant Professor of Bioengineering at Northeastern University, about the extensive set of tools she has collected and used over the years to compensate for her blindness. To listen to other episodes from our searchable archive of over 500 episodes, go to www.eyesonsuccess.net. You can also subscribe to the podcast or listen on your smartphone device by saying, play the Eyes on Success podcast. The Maryland chapter of the NOBPC is hosting a parent-student workshop 2021. You can find docs.google.com, Maryland Parent-Student Workshop 2021. Attend Get On BASE, a workshop on behavior, ableism, security, and expectations, September 18th, 2021, from 10:30 a.m. to 2:30 p.m. Eastern Time. Participants will learn how to instill social cues, how to combat ableism, Staying Safe with Technology, and the expectations revolving around consent. Parents and children will split off into two separate groups and attend sessions covering the same topics. Only students over the age of 14 are permitted to register and participate in the student activities. Please submit the below form. We look forward to your participation. Thank you. Required name, email address, phone number, county in Maryland, home address, date of birth, and whether you are a parent or a student on the Google form. From independent.co.uk, Paralympics, who is the world's fastest blind athlete? David Brown lost sight at 13 but discovered sprinting talent at high school. By Graham Massey, G-R-A-E-M-E-M-A-S-S-I-E. David Brown began running at the age of 5 but lost his sight to Kawasaki disease by the age of 13. He is the fastest blind athlete in history and holds world records at 100 meters and 200 meters. The 28-year-old grew up in Kansas City, Missouri before moving to St. Louis to attend the Missouri School of the Blind, and it was there that he discovered his sprinting ability, and he has not slowed down since. While at school, Brown took part in wrestling and goalball, which is a sport designed for the visually impaired, before focusing on athletics. In my first 50-yard dash, I got second. I thought to myself, hey, I'm pretty fast. When my vision started fluctuating, sprinting was a great way to stay competitive against my friends, so I had a need for speed, he said. Since 2014, Brown has run with guide Jerome Avery, who he won the 100 meters T11 race at Rio in 2016. Blind sprinters run side by side in a double lane and are bound together by a tether, with the guide helping direct the athlete down the track and letting them know when they hit the finish line. The T11 classification is for athletes with a vision impairment that allows them very low visual acuity and or no light perception. Brown and Avery train together at the Chula Vista Elite Athlete Training Center near San Diego, under the coaching of Brazilian middle distance great Joaquim Cruz, the Olympic 800 meters gold medalist in 1984 and silver medalist in 1988. But in July, the pair had to make the tough decision that Brown would have to compete with a new guide, Maurice Stewart, because of Avery's ongoing struggle with injuries. Stewart, who currently competes as an athlete for Mesa College in San Diego, will be taking part as Olympic guide for as a Paralympic guide for the first time. Brown, who in his free time plays the drums, piano, and tenor saxophone, and has played in a jazz band, will compete in Tokyo without any fans in the stands or family at the track watching him. But he will know that fiancée Rebecca Hill, with whom he was engaged earlier this year, will be cheering him on. She put up with me for 21 months now. She has to put up with me for the rest of our lives, he wrote on Twitter in April. And his wife-to-be tweeted, he was my boyfriend, now he's my fiancé. And soon he will be my husband. I'm so blessed and thankful that God has brought you into my life. Can't wait for a lifetime of getting boba together. From CNN.com, deafblind Paralympic gold medalist heartbroken after pulling out of Tokyo Games because her mom can't be there as a personal care assistant. Becca Myers won 3 gold medals and a silver at the 2016 Paralympics in Rio de Janeiro, but the swimmer, who's deaf and blind, said being there without someone to help navigate took its toll. The 2-time Paralympian announced on Tuesday that she would not be attending the Tokyo Games next month because she said the U.S. Olympic and Paralympic Committee, USOPC, denied her request to bring her mother to serve as her personal care assistant. Tokyo organizers have put strict restrictions in place for the Games to prevent the spread of COVID-19. In Rio 2016, I did not have my mom or a designated PCA, personal care assistant, to work with me, and I fell apart. So I know if that would happen again if I went to Tokyo without my mom, Myers said Wednesday in an interview with CNN's New Day. Myers, 26, has Usher syndrome, a genetic disorder that causes deafness or hearing loss, and the eye disease retinitis pigmentosa that affects vision and worsens over time. She has been deaf since she was born and has used a cochlear implant since she was young, according to her Team USA bio. She has been swimming since she was 6 and won a silver and bronze medal in the 2012 London Paralympics. Her mom, Maria Myers, told CNN that Becca has a very narrow field of vision, so she needs one-on-one help to navigate airports, dining halls, and other areas of the bustling venues so that she can be in a better position to compete. I'm there just to whisper in her ear, it's on your left, it's on your right, to guide her and take care of her, Maria Myers said. I don't have anything to do with the pool, that's all her and the coaches, but they really have to have staff that knows how to orient and take care of these kids. She has been her daughter's PCA in international competitions since 2017. The USOPC said in a statement that because of the pandemic, there was a drastic reduction placed in the number of accredited support staff able to travel to Japan. In the case of U.S. Paralympics swimming, there is a designated personal care assistant assigned to the team. This PCA has more than 27 years of coaching experience, including 11 years with paraswimmers. Because of the complex nature of these games, the role of the PCA has been filled by a qualified staff member who is able to serve in dual roles and who can assist the team as a whole when needed. This PCA joins a staff of 10 additional accomplished swim professionals, all who have experience with blind swimmers, totaling 11 staff for 34 athletes. The USOPC said it would have sports medicine, athlete services, a mental health program, and other resources available for all members of Team USA. The decisions we've made on behalf of the team have not been easy, and we are heartbroken for athletes who are unable to have their previous support resources available. We are confident in the level of support we will offer Team USA and look forward to providing them a positive athlete experience even in the most unprecedented times, the statement said. Myers said that the decision to withdraw was heartbreaking, and it felt like her 5 years of training was all for nothing. I can't even put it into words. I haven't been sleeping well. I haven't been eating. It's just torn me apart, she told CNN. Swimming is a part of who I am. It's given me an identity as a person. I've always been known as Becca the swimmer, not Becca the deaf-blind person, and now I feel very worthless as a person. Myers said she wants the USOPC to make changes because Paralympic athletes, especially those who are blind or visually impaired, need more resources. I am standing up so that future generations never have to feel the pain that I felt, and that no one on Team USA should ever feel afraid, she said. CNN's Kevin Dotson, Eric Levinson, and David Lauterbach contributed to this story. The Social Security cost of living adjustment will likely be bigger next year, but there are reasons why retirees' monthly checks might not go as far. Article for CNBC.com by Lori Konish, Lori Konish. The Social Security cost of living adjustment for 2022 potentially will be the biggest in 40 years. Estimates indicate the annual boost could be 6.2%, prompted by rising inflation. But rising prices on grocery store shelves and at gasoline pumps aren't the only reasons why those bigger monthly benefit checks will not likely go as far. Social Security's cost of living adjustment is calculated each year using the Consumer Price Index for urban wage earners and clerical workers, also known as the CPI-W. The calculation for 2022 will be based on data through the third quarter. While people may think an approximate 6% benefit increase is good news, it's important to remember it's not necessarily additional income, said Patrick Hubbard, research associate at the Center for Retirement Research at Boston College. Everything is 6% more expensive these days and is only the minimum needed to maintain the purchasing power that you've had all along, Hubbard said. Moreover, two other items, Medicare Part B premiums and taxes, would likely reduce the value of that increase for many, according to research from the Center for Retirement Research. Medicare Part B premiums. While the cost of living adjustment usually goes up every year, so do the Medicare Part B premiums that seniors pay for physician and outpatient services. Part B premium payments are often deducted directly from Social Security beneficiaries' monthly benefit checks. Exactly how much someone pays for Medicare Part B depends on their income. In 2021, the monthly premium is $148.50 for single individuals with up to $88,000 in income and married couples with up to $176,000. But those monthly premiums can be as high as $504.90. $504.90 per month for high earners. From 2000 to 2020, Social Security benefits had an average annual increase of 2.2%, while Medicare Part B premiums went up by 5.9%. In a single year, the benefit reduction due to Medicare Part B premiums may be minimal, according to the Center for Retirement Research, but over time, it widens. For example, in 30 years, the average total benefit could hypothetically grow by 89% to $3,600, up from $1,900, according to the Center for Retirement Research's calculations. But once Medicare Part B premiums are included, net benefits would rise by just 60% to $2,800 from $1,750. There is this increase in the benefit, but because it's eroded by Medicare premiums, it's not nearly fast enough to keep up with what inflation would be, Hubbard said. Of note, one rule called the Hold Harmless provision protects many Social Security beneficiaries from having their benefit payments reduced due to higher Medicare premiums. Income taxes. Income from Social Security is subject to federal income taxes for certain beneficiaries. Individuals with less than $25,000 in combined income or married couples with less than $32,000 do not have to pay taxes on their benefits. Combined income is calculated by adding adjusted gross income, non-taxable interest income, and half of Social Security benefits. Social Security beneficiaries who are above those combined income thresholds pay taxes on up to 85% of their benefits. Those tax thresholds are not adjusted for wage or price growth. Consequently, more beneficiaries are taxed on their benefits over time, notes the Center for Retirement Research. More from portfolio perspective. Here's a look at other stories impacting portfolio planning and retirement saving. Hot links include, bullet, how to reduce the tax bite of the coming great wealth transfer. Bullet, many 401k investors don't use target date funds the right way. Bullet, inflation concerns have many retirees worried about running out of money. In 1983, 8% of eligible families paid taxes on their benefits. Today, an estimated 56% of beneficiary families pay those levies. That is expected to increase to 58% in 2030. But if rising inflation prompts higher annual benefit adjustments, more families will pay taxes on their benefits as a result, resulting in a reduced net benefit. Inflation protection is good and needed and helps a lot of retirees, Hubbard said, but also is a little bit of a double-edged sword in that it does not necessarily provide as much inflation protection as much additional income as one might initially think on its face because of this taxation question, he said. From ScienceDirect.com, glow in the dark. Using a heat-sensitive camera for blind individuals with prosthetic vision. This is an abstract that is published by Roxana Sadeghi, R-O-K-S-A-N-A-S-A-D-E-G-H-I, Arati Karta, A-R-A-T-H-Y-K-A-R-T-H-A, Michael P. Berry, Chris Bradley, Paul Gibson, Avi Caspi, A-V-I-C-A-S-P-I, Arup Roy, A-R-U-P-R-O-Y, and Giseline Danielli, G-I-S-L-I-N-D-A-G-N-E-L-I-E. Abstract. To date, retinal implants are the only available treatment for blind individuals with retinal degenerations, such as retinitis pigmentosa. The Argus II is the only visual implant with FDA approval, with more than 300 users worldwide. Argus II stimulation is based on a grayscale image coming from a head-mounted visible light camera. Normally, the 11-degree by 19-degree field of view of the Argus II user is full of objects that may elicit cerebellar phosphenes. The prosthesis cannot meaningfully convey so much visual information, and the percept is reduced to an ambiguous impression of light. This study is aimed at investigating the efficacy of simplifying the video input in real time using a heat-sensitive camera. Data were acquired from 4 Argus II users in 5 stationary tasks with either hot objects or human targets as stimuli. All tasks were of alternative forced choice design, where precisely one of the response alternatives was defined to be correct by the experimenter. To compare performance with heat-sensitive and normal cameras across all tasks, regardless of M, We used an extension of signal detection theory to latent variables, estimating personability and item difficulty in D units. Results demonstrate that subject performance was significantly better across all tasks with the thermal camera compared to the regular Argus II camera. The future addition of thermal imaging to devices with very poor spatial resolution may have significant real-life benefits for orientation, personal safety, and social interactions, thereby improving quality of life. Keywords: retinal implant, thermal camera, M alternative forced choice, activities of daily living, performance measures, psychophysics. 1. Introduction. Retinal prosthetic implants are targeted at patients with end-stage outer retinal degenerative diseases such as retinitis pigmentosa, RP, and age-related macular degeneration. These diseases primarily affect the photoreceptors and the retinal pigment epithelium, and only indirectly the bipolar cells and ganglion cells. More specifically, due to the loss of input from photoreceptors in RP, the other layers of the retina change in such a way that at the end stage of the disease, the affected retina is no longer recognizable as an orderly layered structure of parallel processing units. Jones and others, 2003, Mark and others, 2007. Changes in the retina include new connections between bipolar cells, which result in signals spreading out horizontally through the retina. This particularly limits achievable resolution using electrical stimulation. Danielli, 2012, Mark et al., 2007. Today, there is no cure to prevent or stop the degeneration progress that happens slowly over decades. Yet even in the end stage of these diseases, there are surviving ganglion cells that can send signals to the brain through the optic nerve in response to electrical stimulation. Humayun et al., 1996, Santos et al., 1997. To deliver the most effective stimulation to the remaining ganglion cells, one challenge is to get close to those cells. Surface electrodes have been shown to be safe and provide visual perception, but if the implant is not perfectly opposed to the retina, they may remain far from the ganglion cell layer, and thus require a large surface area in order to sufficiently stimulate neurons without exceeding safe charge density limitations. De Baltasar et al., 2008. To date, the Alpha AMS by Retina Implant AG in Germany, Stingel et al., 2017, no longer in production, and Argus II by Second Sight Medical Products in California, USA, Da Cruz et al., 2016, no longer in production, are the only retinal implants that have been approved for clinical use, but they offer only limited functional vision to blind subjects, best described as moving shadows. The Argus II consists of a 6x10 array of round, platinum-coated 200 mm diameter electrodes that stimulate the surviving ganglion cells in the retina, and it covers 11 degrees by 19 degrees, or approximately 22 square degrees, diagonally of the visual field. The stimulation is based on head-mounted camera imagery that is fed into a video processing unit, VPU. The VPU converts the image into grayscale, reduces the resolution to that of an electrode array, and generates the signals to stimulate the 6D electrodes through a wireless telemetry link. Strunks and Dagnelli, 2014. The Argus II has been implanted in more than 300 blind individuals worldwide. It has been shown to improve performance for locating and identifying the direction of motion of an object, and is helpful for orientation and mobility in high contrast settings in laboratory experiments. Dagnelli, 2006, Dagnelli et al., 2017, Humayun et al., 2016, Humayun et al., 2003, Humayun et al., 2009, Strunks and Dagnelli, 2014. However, under normal circumstances, the visual field in an Argus II wearer may be full of people and objects at multiple distances. The complex scene, low resolution, and spread of elicited activity through the retina combine to yield a poorly structured, blurry image. In real life, Argus II users will want to find and communicate with people, detect and avoid obstacles, and manipulate objects. With the regular Argus II camera, stimulation is based on light intensity throughout the visible image. Due to this charge spread mentioned above, in low contrast and or brightness situations, using a visible light camera may cause the target to blur into the background, requiring Argus II users to spend more time and energy to perform even a simple task. In many situations, it may not be possible to compensate by using other senses, for instance, hearing and touch, by hand or cane. For example, when handling a hot pot on a stove, caution is required using only touch, which may result in a dangerous accident. When looking for someone to ask for assistance in a public place or looking for an empty seat in a crowded auditorium, one needs to distinguish people from inanimate objects. Thus, the use of other senses alone may not eliminate safety hazards or improve performance. A better solution may be to simplify the input image before presenting it to the user. The approach investigated in this study was to utilize a thermal imager as an alternative to the normal Argus II visible light camera. A thermal camera filters out cooler objects and presents only warmer objects in a visual scene, regardless of scene illumination and target contrast. Thermography, or thermal imaging, has been successfully used in a wide range of fields that require safety monitoring. These include applications in firefighting to detect smoke and heat, Copa, Reyes, Williams, Baum, and Guazzini, 2019, road safety in vehicles with an autonomous operation mode to detect pedestrians, Maiteglu, Habibi, and Murenschild, 2019. Military and defense for target recognition, Stout, Madaneni, Tremblay, and Tain, 2019. And even disease control by screening people at airports or hospitals for elevated body temperatures related to epidemics such as COVID-19, SARS, and bird flu, Li et al., 2020, Ng et al., 2004. Moreover, thermal imaging has found new uses in medical imaging, such as corneal thermography to assess corneal integrity in the study of dry eye, corneal ulcers, and diabetic retinopathy. Koniecka, Schutzau, Koch, Hauenstein, and Flammer, 2018. And a recent case report discusses the utility of thermal imaging in Horner syndrome showing anhidrosis. Henderson, Ramulu, and Lawler, 2019. The ability to detect warm objects could be helpful to blind individuals for locating hazards such as a stove or toaster, or desired objects such as a hot cup of coffee or a meal. In addition, people and pets are visible in the thermal image, which makes it easier for users to locate and differentiate them from inanimate objects. We first reported the use of thermal imaging for Argus II users during ARVO 2016, Danieli et al. 2016. In two recently published studies, Argus II users performed two stationary tasks, a mobility task and an orientation mobility task with a thermal camera. The results suggested some benefit of using a thermal camera for Argus II users and potentially other low vision individuals. He et al., 2020, Montezuma et al., 2020. The present study bears similarities to those of Montezuma et al. And He et al., but differs in three important respects. One, we chose our tasks to be more diverse and more similar to what an Argus II user would encounter in the real world. Two, all tasks were structured as M, alternative forced choice tasks. On each trial, there were M greater than 2 possible response alternatives, with precisely one of the response alternatives defined as correct. 3. We used a novel analysis framework that allows quantification of subject ability and task difficulty, regardless of the number of response alternatives. Subject ability and task difficulty are latent variables, and to estimate these, we used an extension of signal detection theory to latent variables. There is more about the study, and I've run out of time for today's episode of Vision News. Be sure to listen next time. I hope you enjoyed it. I'm Doris Hyde, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Vision News is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading